The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, misogyny, and a hormonal teenager's rants. And this hormonal teenager was snorting lavender essential oil to wake himself up. And I don't think that's working, but it smells good and I like it. So yes, that's the new drug that we're doing. Welcome to the 22nd episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish, which is gonna be named Ignorance. And why I remember this in a podcast named In the Memory of the Goldfish, because I just finished writing the story which I was supposed to write a long time back, and I am high on a lot of things and I am feeling so good being somebody who's never high on anything. So in this episode, I'll try not to fuck up like I did in the 21st episode. I named it wrong and I called it the 20th episode on some platforms and 21st on other platforms, and I do not know what basically happened, but whatever it did won't be repeated this time because I won't be uploading it, and I'll be asking my producer to do it because he's a smart ass and an absolutely lovely person. And that is it. This podcast, this episode is gonna cover the La Mata Viejitas crime scene serial killer thing. The thing with this specific case is I'm just gonna give you a little brief that in this episode I'm not that focused on the crime itself, but more focused on the society that it happened and what kind of people it was and how it ended up enabling the crime and how weird everything was. So that's gonna be my major focus, and that's where I did the most of my research. It's a very famous true crime story, and I believe, again, a fair warning, like all my previous episodes, I'm also recording this at like a very weird hour, and I really do not have the cognizance to use words like cognizance. Fuck, maybe I'm underestimating myself and I'm pretty intelligent. Oh, I need to speak slowly because most people don't understand when I'm speaking too fast. So let's get right into it. Today, I love the fishy news. And we have dolphins. The article headline reads, "Dolphin deliberately get high on puff of fish nerve toxin by carefully chewing and passing them around." You know, reading this article made me feel less singled out. I mean, now I know that I'm not the only fish, rather an aquatic species creature that wants to get high. Others also want that. Just because I have an alcohol allergy and I do not know how to get high because I'm too scared to walk out of my room to get anything to get high is a separate case. But yeah, dolphins, you go, you're an inspiration. The article even states, "Dolphins are thought as one of the most intelligent species in the animal kingdom, and experts believe that they have put their ingenuity to use in the pursuit of getting high," end quotes. And I'm like, yeah, that's what sentient beings do. They get high because that's what Nirvana is all about, getting fucking high, because that's what we do in Alabama. I'm gonna cover a cult very soon, and I do not know which one, but I want to make it a little funny, and the cults that I came across was like, oh my god, no. The article even went on to build a parallel between the human teens and the dolphin teenagers who are actually getting high on the entire thing. The human teens, on the other hand, like according to the article, I did not look into it because I didn't want to, were licking toads to get a kick out of the thing, and both dolphins and teenagers acted the same way. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm not soon gonna be a teenager. I'm gonna be 20. Fuck. Anyway, the toxins, the toxic fish is passed around the group, as the article states. The toxin itself is very fatal, but not in small amounts. In small amounts, it's a narcotic of sorts. And the dolphins have figured out a way to squeeze it just enough. And I was like, what if there's a police in the ocean who's like, we are not gonna puff of fish non-proliferation activity or something. I do not know. That would be so cool. But anyway, after chewing the puffer, they gently pass it around, as I told you. And then they start acting most peculiarly, the article says. They hang around with their noses at the surface as if fascinated by their own reflection. The teenagers, however, they just look at the sky or just have unprotected sex in human beings. So dolphins in that case are like better than us, but whatever. And the documentary even went on to say that they have been using spy cams like devices to look at the dolphins. And I'm like, creeps. And the article actually says this: the spy creatures were designed to infiltrate dolphins' hidden lives by looking like marine creatures a dolphin might encounter in their everyday lives. And I was like, what if they're having sex? What if a child dolphin is watching porn? How dare you scare them like this? Is this like FBI in the ocean? What the fuck is this? And in my room, no animal but my own cat is allowed, because I don't want anybody recording me. And I just realized, what if my cat is a fucking bot? Because he acts stupid and he does not love me, and I'm absolutely lovable. So he is a robot, most probably. But yeah. Anyway, talking about polluters, the second news I got today reads: couple finds out absolutely gorgeous pate they were eating was cat food. And you know, I read this and I was like, goodness gracious, my urge to eat my cat's food. Even right now, it's like right in front of me. Most of the times I smell it, it's disgusting. But sometimes I smell it, like today, I'm like, yes, I want to have this. Please somebody put this in my gravy or something, and do not tell me about it, because I want to eat this crap. But I read this, I was like, I like this couple. So the article is actually pretty long, and I did not expect that. So I'll give you a little summary instead of taking like quotes from it. And they basically say that this is a couple who was in Sheffield. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I should have looked the pronunciation up in United Kingdom. They're from United Kingdom and they're now living in France. They did not notice the cat on the packaging of the food. So they really had a lovely dinner of absolutely gorgeous pate and baked bread. When the three, the husband, the wife, and the daughter, they had the food and they were like, what is it? And the girl looked at it and she says, and I quote, honestly, I nearly wet myself. I was absolutely howling with laughter. And I was like, there were more people than that. My mom started laughing and my sister started laughing. My sides were splitting. My mouth was hurting. I was laughing so much. I do not know how laughing makes your sides split, but it is something that I'm interested in. So make my sides split. So yeah, I was like, this was just so fascinating. I really want to eat my cat food now, because according to the article, these people also did not fall ill. I'm like, yes, I can eat it now. But even mom, despite the entire thing and the dad asking her, are you trying to poison me? She was like, it was so lovely and beautiful to eat it. I just loved it. And I was like, aww. But yeah, and they were like, it's hard to live in France with French products and not in English after Brexit. And I was like, yeah, the entire article was funny. But by this end, I had this Emily in Paris vibe that English people are coming to these French country and expecting the entire French people to start learning English to speak with them. But then I realized the couple is like in their 80s. So if they cannot learn a new language, that is kind of fine. But I had like very strong opinions that if you're going to a new country, why don't you learn the language? And like, why don't you try to etc. etc. But then I was like, yeah, maybe they're too old for me to make that judgment. So I'm not going to rant about it. But if anybody feels like ranting to me about Emily in Paris, I'm all ears. It's such an annoying show. Though if any cat food company wants to approach me for their food and stuff, and then I just whistled while speaking, that was literally my lips fluttering around. Oh my God, I have such full lips. But here's an actual ad that I'm getting paid for. So listen to it. I hope you had fun listening to my voice. You know, I've been listening to Edith Piaf the entire time and I'm like, yes. And today in Out of the Blue, I don't have a transition for Out of the Blue. Wow, fuck. But Today, I actually intended for The Art of the Blue to be like a minute long, and I was just going to talk about how inadequate I felt recording this episode, and that's why I procrastinated so much in recording it and like actually doing the research, because I recently got really active on Clubhouse and there were some people who were talking there about true crime and stuff, and they had so much knowledge. They had so much things to talk about, and I was literally like, for the people who do not know Clubhouse, it's an amazing app. Follow me there. It's Koi on here, like everywhere. That rhymed. I'm so good. So, but I felt so inadequate. I'm not even kidding. I was like, these people can talk so well. And I'm supposed to be a podcaster. And I cannot voice my own. Like, I cannot speak if the room has more than 20 people. And I was like, wow, no. So that was, like, recording this episode was so difficult. And I'm so emotional. But yeah, so I put this together in, I believe, 10 hours. Now I started at 22 hours and it's 5:10 a.m. So this much time it took me to put this together. And yeah, so it's going to be a fun one. And this was supposed to be my Out of the Blue, but then I actually did research on 7 different Out of the Blues, and I have gotten such an amazing listeners validation story this time so far. I am looking so much forward to speak that out loud and ruin everybody's life who listens to this podcast. Please be ready for it. But today, in the main part of Out of the Blue, some context, I've been thinking of getting a tattoo. Like, I don't know where, I don't know how big, but I wanted to be symbolic of something like underworld, but in a positive sense, where people are suffering but thriving in this suffering, kind of a BDSM of a underworld. I'm not sure. I'm gonna illustrate it myself, and the birds have started to chirp at the right time. This time I did not record the entire night and no bird spoke, and as soon as I started recording, they're like, oh my god, Koi is speaking. If a fish can speak, so can we. So yeah, that's the bird speaking. But yes, tattoos. And when I was going through the etymology of the word tattoo, which had nothing to do with this research, and some other extra research, I came across a warrior clan called the Picts. I do hope I'm pronouncing it right. I have not looked into pronunciations of half the things today. And I was also thinking of ranting about how stupid, I'm sorry to use that word, but how stupid some people are that they do not even pronounce the words properly. At least speak about, at least try to make an effort. For example, I was listening to somebody who was talking about Santa Muerte, and I'm like, they did not say Santa Muerte, they said Santa Muerte. And I was like, no, make an effort to at least fucking look into how it's freaking pronounced. I do not know what's wrong with people. And I do not know that's the correct way of you saying the word pronounced, but just why? Even I don't do it sometimes, but sometimes when you're looking at words, when you're talking about deities and stuff, at least try to pronounce it properly. Please do not put in your accent everywhere. It is rude. It is very rude. And yeah, so today on Out of the Blue, the main part, we are covering I'm actually going to look up the pronunciation for this. Okay, so I was right. They were called Picts. Like, the word is pronounced as Picts. I'm not sure what they were actually called. They were supposed to be called Picts. They were a Celtic speaking tribe in the Scots, and they were often called as the protector of Scots by the Romans when they tried to invade there. The Picts were basically beautiful people with tattoos covered all over their body. Gorgeous tattoos. And these tattoos were colorful. They had flowers. They were just absolutely amazing. I saw some illustrations and I was like, yes, that's the amount of tattoos I want. And the best part about them is that they did not wear any fucking clothes. They wanted to show off their tattoos. They wore iron chains, if I remember it right, to like symbolize their bravery, and they were an amazing warrior clan. And the Romans could not ever defeat them. And it was just an amazing thing to read about them, though not properly, because if I had read about them properly, I would have given you a lot more facts. I just read one article and I just picked up the things which I believed in the most, kind of. And yeah, so do look them up. It's an amazing clan of people who were so amazing. And yeah, though another fun fact about the Picts is that they also disappeared. We are not sure when, but they were so powerful, and also a lot of historians are like, why and how did they disappear? And most people believe that it was the Christianization of the Picts and the Scotland and the entire continent, basically, which started to change the ethnic diversity, whitewashed the entire thing. And you know how that goes. We've talked about a lot of times. So some people, enough number of people for it to be in an article, believe that that's what happened to the Picts and that's how they disappeared, which was very sad. And also, what was it? Yes, this, I forgot. In the same article that I was reading, there was a 19th century description, like an illustration, sorry, and description of the Picts. And you know, the fun fact about that one was the entire thing about Picts was they did not wear clothing because they wanted to flaunt their bodies and their tattoos. Because honestly, and clothing is a very Christianized and a very modernized concept. Nobody cared about clothing, I believe, unless and until it was to protect themselves from the cold. But that one had like fur covering their crouches, but nothing else. According to my understanding, if somebody's gonna wear a fur, they would try to cover the entire body, not just the crouch area, and for women, the breast and the crouch area, because they didn't fucking care about that. But that was, I was like, you guys just freaking change history according to how it would suit well to you. Now that's what we are doing in it now. So yeah, that's a little thing about Out of the Blue, which was very rantful and really fun to do. And this is most probably going to be the entire episode, and I'm feeling a heat rush. You know, I recorded an entire segment just right now with my air conditioner on and me being like, you know, this is the first time in ever that I'm like recording the podcast properly comfortable, when I'm like totally in chill and cold, when it was not winters. And I don't know what came over me, and I re-listened to what I said, and the disturbance was so fucking high that my editing skills were not good enough to hide that, and it was so bad. So I'm going to be recording the podcast again in dreadful heat and kind of sweating. So depending on what kind of fetishes you're into, I am gonna be looking hot while recording it, and I'm gonna be hot, and I'm gonna have a lot of hot flushes. So yeah, so today's story is called Ignorance. The date that I have given to it is 26th May 2005, and the time that I've given to it is 01:09 a.m. and I don't know how to vocalize that time, 1:09 a.m. That sounds so vacant, like not time at all. But yeah, so that's the time that I've given it. And I actually enjoyed what I just recorded, you know, that 10-15 minutes of me basically ranting about every random thing. And then I heard it and it was so bad. And I don't want to repeat all the things that I said, and I feel bad now. Fuck you, AC, and noise disturbance and my bad editing skills. But here we are, and now we finally start with the story. I'm running my hands through my hair. This suddenly gets stuck. I mean, not suddenly. I know how it works. I haven't combed my hair in like 3 weeks now. It is depressing to see half my hair falling out like snow when I do that. I don't even want to take a bath anymore. Everything get clogged with my hair. And so with that get clogged, I cannot improvise. My brain's not working properly. But you know, the starting part of the story was based, I was not able to understand what I'm going to write. So I was just writing what was happening around me. Even the time frame is exactly the same when I started writing the story. So anyway, I keep on touching my hair, press my curls like a buzz button, and my mother looks at me, and the only thing she can say was, "Ay, what are you doing? You know, your hair will just fall out like this. They're already so rough and so wrong. You just don't take proper care of them." And I look at her and I'm like, Mom, be kind. Don't say such things to people, which, like, just don't say things which they cannot change in 5 seconds. And she's like, no, you're me, my baby. Of course, I hate my hair too, so I can do it. No, I get the license of hating everybody because I hate that about myself. And I'm like, yeah, no, but you know what? I need coffee. Can be. So this is actually what happened, and I was doing this thing and I've not combed my hair in a while because it's actually very depressing to see my hair falling out because I love my luscious curls and they like fall out like snowflakes. But so they do that, and I actually wrote a lot of these parts in Spanish because I've been watching Modern Family, and I am Sofia has is somebody that has inspired me so much, and the story is based in Mexico, and I was like, yeah, Spanish, and when I was doing that, I was like, yeah, maybe this is cultural appropriation, and I took out the Spanish part and I translated it all back to English because I do know the language, but I do not know the language well enough to actually include it. So yeah, that's the start of it. Continuing with the story. Sometimes I don't understand her. She is, you know, that's not actually the part of the story. That's like basically the story, because the first part of the story is basically what was happening in my life. So all commentary till yet was the story. So I give out a loud sigh. Coffee can be, I said. I sometimes don't understand her. She's always awake till the sunrise, and she wakes up again with the first light and starts screaming like a parrot, saying, I don't make enough time to sleep, then I don't have time to live because the sun is out and there are 18 people that I need to impress to live. But she cannot wake me up because I did not sleep enough, that's why I cannot go to bed again. So this constant rant, it keeps on continuing. It's a rhetoric thing. So yeet! My day and this person who goes on to slash women wearing makeup. That is what it is all about. I closed my eyes and blurred out my existence for a bit. I rubbed my eyes, and when I opened it, everything was yet again blurred. I do not know what is up with the world. Why is it, you know? God, breathe in, breathe out. Yes, I decided to close my eyes to take a little rest. And then when I woke up, my mother's birds are chirping. Burp, 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 burp. And that sounds just reminds me of the word perpetrator. And it is an interesting word to use, the perpetrator, when I do not know who that is. We do not know who that is. I wrote this. And I do not know why I wrote this. And I wrote that. So now the next timestamp I've given is 26th May 2005, 7:07 a.m. With the parrot's chirps, you know, I'm not sure at this point who's the parrot, the mother or the mother's birds. With the parrot's chirps came in the nice lady invite. I don't think I've seen someone so eager to help, so out there. Old, though, the lines on her face said that she lived in a soulless world. But here, among us all, she was just here as the butterfly who wanted to make the world go to the moon with her. She flutters her wings, trying to change the world. He has a low-key crush on this nurse, just saying. Some mornings when I see her, I can feel it in my bones that I just want to hug her. Like, I hope my mother would have hugged my children. All her love, I feel, has been lost on me, my mother's. And mine got lost in that overpowering flow. This woman, though, who walks in the door every day, brings this unique static with her. Buenos dias, she says to me, bowing a little, and that's when I realized that I must have been staring. She knows that I have been, and I don't think she seems to mind it. I mean, she is like a mother to my mother, so makes me an equally aged grandson to her. I just like her so much, you know. I've seen my children look at her do the same way I do, the same way the cat looks at the birds, both in awe, in love, and in hunger. You know, I just felt after I said the word hunger that the story just ended. I don't know why, like, there was a page break and I was like, what the fuck? Is that what I wrote in last, like, 5 fucking hours? And then I realized, no, there's a little bit more to it. And I was able to breathe again. I just, like, what? For a second. So, anyway, continuing, I begin to pack up my paper. She has this habit to look into things. I mean, I don't blame her. I do not think she can read though. Maybe it's just the pictures or the mere prospect of someone with so many papers that fascinates her. I want to know what may be going on in her mind. I do hope that we create a gadget like that. There's just so much weird stuff out there. Maybe making something useful for once would help. And this is actually something I read off of Google. I literally Googled technologies in 2005. And the very first line it said was, 2005 was a very weird time for technology. And that's it. That's the only thing that I read. I did not care what technology there was because I couldn't really care about that, to be very honest. So I just slapped that on. So, yeah. I smile at her continuously. In little increments, in little glances here and there, rather hastily, you know. And I walk out of the house to go sit in the house away from everyone, the other house. 26th May 2005, 9:09 a.m. You know, I've tried to do this synchronicity thing. I was gonna say synchronicity, but then I realized the first time was 1:07, which is not synchronous by any means. So, yeah. But here, I lay on my back looking at the sketch composites. The world seemed to become as dark as it was at night when I look at them. Just, I cannot rub my eyes and doze back to sleep anymore because my brain and my body does not appreciate me doing that. I take a deep yawn and I feel my lungs hurt as I do. As I let that yawn out, the mirror to my right shatters. Fuck, fuck, fuck! You know, this is actually a very weird thing happened. So one fine day, my dad was telling everybody about how steam engines used to roll, and he was very passionate about the entire thing. And there were like children sitting in the group and my mother and all. And he was like, so the steam engine used to start and it made a song like, fuck, 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 fuck. And we everybody started laughing. He did not realize that he was saying the word fuck. Per se, he was just like vocalizing it like I do all the time. And my mother was laughing like shit. And she was like, what the fuck? And everybody was laughing and he was like, you guys are annoying, I don't want to talk to you. So that happened. And you know, I actually was gonna talk about this person, the character development. Initially, this person, the protagonist, when it was in my shoes, it was kind of less you know, a bad person. Not, I wouldn't say bad person, a considerate person. He seemed to be a considerate person who thinks about other people's emotions. But as it comes into the story, you might feel, which would make even more sense now, that the person is actually kind of a hypocrite. They think that they're being nice to everybody and being equivalent, but the fact that they just assume somebody who comes to work is illiterate and does not know how to read and just gets fascinated by the intellect and stuff makes them kind of a shitty person and who loves to think in their own head. So that is the character development I wanted to talk about in this person. So yeah, a kind of a hypocrite of a person, which is going to make a lot of sense when the entire story unfolds, because there's so much hypocrisy in this one. But yeah, where was I? Fuck, fuck, fuck. Yes. Anyway, continue. I'm so sorry for this like weird rampant things which I keep on going with. And the word rampant I use because the next word, the third word in the next sentence is rampant. So I continue with the story. I hear rampant footsteps coming towards me. And Senor, Senora, she says after that point, I do not understand. I don't even hear. I don't want to listen. My brain and the broken mirror has said enough. Oh, yes, the mirror broke to the right. Did I say that? So he was sitting on his bed looking at the sketch composites, musing about everything. And then suddenly the mirror to his right broke. And the help came in running and they said, Senor, Senora. And he could understand what they were trying to say because his brain connected the dots. He ran I ran back towards her or whatever that will be left by the time I reach. I reached and she was on her bed laying flat, her neck hanging off the edge, her legs out her sheets. She was laying flat. Everybody was standing a meter away, careful not to touch anything. If they do, it seemed the world would collapse. I do appreciate that, really. But she also stood in one corner, her hands holding each other in front of her. I do not know why I saw that and I ran to her and I put her in my embrace. Rather, I put myself into her embrace. Her hands opened up as I was coming into a better embrace. I noticed that they were red. There was some pressure around them. There were some markings. Maybe she held her hands so tightly that they became red. And I held her really hard. I do not know if those red hands were the product of her holding herself, her own hands so tight that she was able to contain her emotions. I then suddenly realized what I was doing and I started screaming and asking them all to leave because I did not know what else to do. I didn't cry. The only reason I wanted to cry was because I hugged her. How could I? But then I bowed down to my mother. I looked at her. She laid there. The blood from her nose made its way a little towards her lips and went back and now was flowing almost through her hair. Her left eye was a little swollen and now turning blue. I can see she was punched. It just happened. You know, I made sure that there was no man in the house, so who could do this? I do not know how can this even happen. Why did this happen near me? What do I do? Why do I do? I dropped to my knees near her bed and I see her neck. It had those bright maroon lines which I've become so familiar with over the past few years, the shoelace embedded in them. A neck which was only used for gold so far. What was her life if not that, and now it's just being stripped away by a cheap linen cloth. Side note, are like shoelaces made out of linen? Cheap polyester? I don't know. A cheap textile. What have I done wrong? I bow down to her, not to pay my respects, but to see more carefully who did it. Now, 25th November 2006, that's basically after a long time and like one and a half year. The date is 25th November 2006. The time is 13:13. And there's only one line to end this. She walks in front of me, she licks her upper ear and she winks. How could I have been so blind? Dun 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 dun. That is the end of the story. You know, this is one of those stories which I feel fucking need the research to make sense, and I'll keep on coming back to it to make more sense out of it, and maybe by the end of it you'll be as impressed I am by the entire story. I do not know why today my vocal cords are like aching exceptionally more than before. I'm taking so much more rest than I usually do, and yeah, so I'll try to speak a little slowly by my cat. Oh my god, I just, like, while I was resting, I realized I left my cat outside for the entire night and the bastard did not say anything. And as soon as it was morning, he was at my door and he really let me in. Like, what the fuck? And I felt so bad, like I'm calling him a bastard. But now he's just like looking at me. He's sitting in front of me and giving this condescending meh. I was like, yeah, bitch, you didn't look. Like, I went out at around 1 or 2 calling Plutus, Plutus. And he was nowhere to be found. He did not come out or anything. So I thought maybe he was sleeping with my mom and I did not want to disturb her. But now he was outside and I feel so bad that he was basically hungry the entire night. And yeah, now he's looking at me like with sleepy, drowsy, cute eyes. So yeah, that was my last half an hour, I believe. So off to the real life inspiration of the story and how I wanted it to go. So initially, what I wanted to do was I wanted to make the entire research an extension of the story in the terms how that person, how the police was functioning to identify the serial killer, which was on loose and that kind of thing. But when I was doing that, it was devastatingly boring and did not really go with my vibe. So I am gonna jump right into it like I usually do. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Juana Dayanara Barraza Samperio, who was born in Hidalgo, Mexico in 1957, December 27th. And she was a Capricorn. I do not know what that means, but I was looking through sites and they were like, Juana Barraza, serial killer, Capricorn. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
my cat's not a Capricorn, but he's a Cancarian. You know, some people say Cancerian, some people say Cancarian. I'm not sure, but Cancarian sounds fun, so I'm gonna be saying Cancarian. He's a Cancarian. My cat's Cancarian, and the woman was a Capricorn. And it is 6:11 a.m. I do not know anymore what I'm saying. So Juana, she was a daughter in a family of other three. I really do not know what that means, a family of other three. What I'm basically trying to say, she was like a daughter and had a sister, had a father named Trinidad Barraza, who was a police officer, her mother, Justa Semperio, an alcoholic sex worker. And I believe Juana was the younger sister, and I couldn't find the name of her elder sister. But 3 months after Juana's birth, her mother abandoned Trinidad and went on to begin a relationship with Refugio Semperio, who was a married man who was also Justa's stepfather and ended up being Juana's main male power figure. And if, like, to make it more understandable, basically, Juana, the mother, started dating the husband, the new husband, her stepfather, and got into a relationship with him and moved in with him, with Juana. And the most credible male influence, I'm underlining the word male, but honestly, the only credible influence, the strongest person, the most reliable person that Juana knew in her entire life, was this person who dated her grandma and later, according to some accounts, also sexually assaulted her. So yeah, all right, so that is like basically the starting of her life, and this is honestly the simplest part of it all. Now, when she was a child, her relationship with her mother was actually rather broken, and they spoke very rarely. At the age of 12, Juana's mother sold her to, like, for lack of a better word, to a man called Jose Lugo in return for 3 beers, according to some articles, which was actually, when I read it first, it was outrageous. When I read it second, it was still outrageous. When I read it for the third time, it was still fucking outrageous. It still is. But when I read it so many times, I just realized this one little thing, that this is actually possible, that somebody was so deep into their addiction that they actually sold their daughter to a man for 3 beers, allegedly. But yeah, so that happened, and Juana was sold to this man. She was with him for more or less 4 to 5 years, depending on different accounts. In this duration, she was impregnated twice, once when she was 13, the second time when she was 16. Both of the pregnancies resulted in miscarriages, and I believe it would be safe to assume that she was raped, abused, most probably physically abused too in this entire time. So this whole thing, as I told you, lasted for about 4 to 5 years, not sure, but according to most of my research, at the end of 5 years of this abuse, she had a child, a male child. And I was just imagining, like, this was not written anywhere, the amount of trauma that the child who was born out of this situation would have been carrying. May it be ancestral, may it be, like, actual real life front trauma, but that is heavy amount of stuff. All right, so that happened, and Juana was actually found by her uncles, and her mother had lied to them throughout these years that she ran away with Jose Lugo. That was his name, right? Yes, that she ran away with Jose Lugo of her own free will. When finally her mother died of cirrhosis of the liver, she moved to the Mexico City. There, she had three other children from two different men, it seems. Like, I'm not very sure, but like, that was it. According to most of the reports that I read, she actually ended up marrying one of these people that she met. And he was also an alcoholic like her mother. And he used to beat her, abuse her, did not really bring in a penny. So she had to work a lot. She worked as a street vendor. She used to sell clothing and stuff. But yeah, and his name was Miguel, yes. And when she was 24 years old, her 12-year-old son, the oldest, who was called Jose Enrique Lugo Barraza, named after his father for some weird reason. Like, not some weird reason, I can actually understand that a lot of times the victim sympathizes with the abuser and thinks that they are the only real person that, or the only real family that they can have. So kind of makes sense. And that person, that child, when they were 12 years old, a group of young alcoholic men surrounded them and they killed the child. And allegedly, according to some reports, Juana actually saw that happening, and it was very, very traumatic. Now, she had two children to take care of, who I believe would be younger than the age of 12. So the expenses are, I believe, very high. And with her odd jobs, she started selling at the Lucha Libre, which is basically a Mexican fight, which basically means free fighting. There is no cap on violence. Mostly it is scripted and it has a lot of dramatics, a lot of antics. Like, even the people are divided into, you know, characters. I'll come to the characters part later because that's actually very interesting. And Juana started working here to sell snacks initially, but then an agent scouted her and asked her to give a try to wrestling. Now, each fight was about to give her 200 to 500 pesos, and which was a lot more than she was earning at the moment. And my phone laptop is saying that my hardware preferences are wrong. Fuck you. You are wrong. So she was like, all right, sure. And she was called El Dama del Silencio. That basically means the silent woman, or the woman of silence of sorts. And her, it sounds dark, but her costume was actually really adorable. It was a pink costume. She had red hair. She had a huge butterfly mask where they were like cutouts for her eyes. It was a very bright pink with golden covered on it. She wore like gold, and it kind of looks really like non-serious, to be very honest. And it is an actually very cool costume. I loved the costume. It was kind of funny to look at, to be very honest. But then I looked at other costumes and they were equally as extra and out there, you know, like in your face. So basically this fight, some like, this is not related to the case specifically, kind of is, but like some details about it. So the fighters are called luchadores, and they're traditionally divided into two basic categories. That is the rudos, which are the bad guys or the tough guys, and they basically break the rules, the rude people kind of, and the technicos, which are basically the good guys and can be literally translated to the technicians. And the technicos, they play by the rules, their movements are complex, they're more flamboyant, and they're like, whoo, ha, Shaolin. That was so wrong, Koi. But yeah, so that's the thing. And that's basically the difference. And when I was looking at the, you know, the costumes, and I told you they were super extra, I was like, you know, this is very RuPaul's Drag Race material, and I want to know more. And They are actually fighters who fight in drag here. They are called exoticos. From what I could interpret about them with my very surface level research about this sport was that their movements are crampy and not very dignified, and which made me think maybe they initially it was to, you know, shame the community, but later on it became somewhat of a statement wherein now the men who are doing drag there beat the asses of other people and they're like, bitch, we won. It's like a mix of masculinity, power, wearing, you know, like that energy and power and strength is neither masculine nor feminine. It's just within the person. It's kind of the message which is rolling around now, which is actually pretty cool. So in 1950, back to the main research, in 1955, Juana had her youngest son, who was basically the youngest son and like a newborn baby. And Lucha Libre alone was not able to pay for all the expenses. And so she resorted to robbery. In 1966, with her plan Aracil Tapia Martinez, they decided to start stealing from the elderly people. Both of them decided to get dressed in white clothing, looked like nurses, to gain access to the home of elderly people who were living alone. They robbed them once they were inside, and soon, as they became more and more comfortable with it, Juana wanted to take all the money for herself because she had a lot of mouths to feed. So she was like, you know what, Araceli, I love you, but you know, this is not working out. I can do this on my own. And so she ended up like started to rob people on her own. But Araceli had an ace up her card. That was her boyfriend, who was a federal police officer, Moses Flores Dominguez, who was basically a corrupt person. They concocted a plan to extort Juana after her one of her solo burglary. And Flores met Juana after the burglary and asked for 12,000 pesos in return for not arresting her. She, I believe, did that, and her situation became worse. Although, and this is, I believe, was something which like caused the murder part. Like, now there was too much rage. There were too many women who have like betrayed the fuck out of her life now. So there was a lot of rage stored there, you know. Though when she committed the first murder is kind of debatable. Some sources say like the killing of elderly women actually started in 1998. But we are not very sure that they were all done by Juana or they were even connected. But most of the sources that I went through said that it all started in 2002. And the source which I'm about to quote from now, from like this point onwards, is gonna take in context the murders which happened 2002 onwards. And now these are gonna be a lot of names. These are all alleged, proven, and said guilty to victims of Juana. So first one, that was in November 25th, 2002, that was of Maria de la Luz Gonzalez Anaya. She was 64 and she was beaten and manually strangled. Then it started happening, like there was a break. And then in 2003, the first one was in March 2 of Guillermina Leon Oropeza, who was 84 and she was manually strangled. In July 24th, Maria Guadalupe Aguilar Cortina, she was 86, she was strangled. October 9th, Maria Guadalupe de la Vegas Morales, 87, her arms were fractured by tying up or just like beating, and she was also strangled. We are not sure if she was manually strangled or was used or something else was used to strangle her. So now the crimes were becoming more violent and more passionate in nature. Then 24th October, like it's about a week or two later, it was Maria del Cambres Munroz Cote de Galva, who was 78 and she was strangled with a stethoscope. In November 4th, it was that of Lucrecia Elsa Clavo Moroccan, who was 85 and she was strangled with a cord. Then it was Natalia Torres Castro, 85, Alicia Cote Dokwan, who were both strangled with a ligature. I do not know what that is, but that's what That was what used to strangle them, both in the month of November again. Then there was a slight break, and in 2004, it was February, when Alicia Gonzalez Castillo and Andrea Tencate Corato were both beaten and strangled. And then in March, Carmen Cardona Rodea, who was 76, was beaten and strangled with a cord. March 26, 6 days after the previous one, Socorro Edina Martinez Parajes, 82, was beaten and strangled with a cord. Guadalupe Gonzalez Sanchez was 74. She was beaten, slammed, and strangled with two cords this time. Then Estela Contoral Terejo, who was 85, was strangled with a stethoscope. Delfina Gonzalez Castillo, 92, was beaten and strangled. Maria Virginia Tispan, 84, was strangled. Maria de Los Angeles Cortez Reynoso, 84, was beaten and strangled with a belt. August 31, Martina Martel Vonquez, who was 72, was strangled with a cord. September 29th, Simona Beldora Alaya, 79, was beaten, smothered with a pillow, and then fatally strangled. October 24th, Maria Dolores Martinez Benavides, 70, beaten and strangled with a stethoscope until her neck snapped. Like, she was not it was not the air which caused her death, it was her neck snapping. I just want to highlight that because I actually saw those pictures of a crime scene, and I saw pictures of most of these crime scenes, and I was honestly bewildered. But later on I saw other crime scenes, and I'm gonna make a comparative study about that. And then in November 17th, Maria Elsmelda Estarda Perez, who was 76, she was beaten and strangled. In January 11th, Julia Vendulpan, 60, was strangled with a pantyhose. February 10th, now this one was one which was proven. It was Maria Elena Mendoza Valeres, who was 57, and she was killed by unknown causes. Then April 13th was Maria Elisa Perez Monero, who was 76. She was strangled with a pantyhose, and then she was fatally beaten, according to some resources. And it was the beating which caused the death and not the strangulation. April 14th, now this was also proven, Arturo Patiño Barranco, she was 70, actually they are not sure about the gender, I'm sorry, 74, and they were strangled. April 19th was Carolina Robledo, who was 79, and she was simply stabbed. April 20, 2005, Ana Maria Valaquez Diaz, who was 62, strangled with a wire. June 17th, Cecilia Villanes Morales, 78, beaten and strangled with a wire. June 39th, it was Maria Gulapede Nuez Almanza, who was 78, and she was strangled with a stethoscope. And this specific death was one of which actually caused the... No, this was not it. I'm sorry. Scrap that. July 5th, there were two which were found, which were actually proven. That was Julia Vargas, 64, and Mario Cruz Flores, who was 84, and they were killed by unknown causes, or multiple causes could have caused that. On July 20th, Emma Armenta, who was 80, she was beaten and strangled with a bathrobe belt. In after almost a couple weeks, it was Emma Reyes Pena, who was 72. She was beaten and strangled with a ligature. I should look up what ligature means. Strangulation by ligature, I believe, from what I just read in the last 30 seconds, is basically any sharp or any rope or something which is used to strangle the ligature, if that's the correct pronunciation. Pipe, vein, that part, basically strangling with a rope or something like that. Then on August 11th, it was Carmen Sanchez Serrano, who was 76. She was basically heavily beaten. August 15th, it was Dolores Concepcion Silva Calva, 91. She was strangled with a bandana, and she was set fire post-mortem. It was in September 28th, then again two people were killed. Maria del Carmen Carmela Gonzalez Miguel, who was 82, beaten and strangled. And Guadalupe Oliver Contreras, who was 85, he was beaten and strangled with a pantyhose. October 18th was Maria de Los Angeles Raper Hernandez. She was 92, beaten and strangled with a scarf. And January 25th, 2006, the final victim, Ana Maria de la Rosa Reyes El Fardo, 84, she was strangled with a stethoscope. Also, that was a very long list. And I felt that I had to name them all out to give respect to all of them. And in case I ended up pronouncing a name wrong, I really did look up each and every word that I could possibly, like, what the fuck was that? Whatever. I tried to look into all the words and I tried to remember all the pronunciation, but if I got any wrong, I'm really, really sorry. Please let me know which were the wrong ones and I'll try to correct them if ever the name comes up again in another future podcast episode. Yes, so as I said, that the trend basically started in 1998 and the police denied to make any connection between all the crimes, and it was only until 2002 that they were like, maybe this is after the point the serial killing part started, but they did not really said that it's a serial killer. And if, in case you know anything about serial killers, normally they have a kind of motive, or they have, you know, this style of specific form of killing. However, Juana was an unplanned serial killer. Not an unplanned, the word is disorganized serial killer. And they are like basically two, there are many types of them, but there's organized and disorganized. Organized serial killers have qualities such as above average intelligence. They're very methodological. They lure victims properly. They maintain control over the entire crime scene. They follow the crimes in the media and they're very socially adequate. However, the disorganized are low intelligence, quote unquote. They are more impulsive. They murder whenever the opportunity arises and not properly plan it. They don't dispose of the body and they leave the body wherever it was, and sometimes even work around it. They place it in a fun manner, which Juana actually did when she burnt some of her victims and she placed flowers on others. She went on to strip some of them according to the crime scenes pictures I saw. Maybe she did, maybe she did not. Some of their clothing was ripped off in a particularly strange manner. And the most important thing about the disorganized ones are that they're usually introverted or socially anxious. And this is something which, like, I don't know why it hinted me back to the Dama del Silencio, because when I saw heard of that and it was like the silent woman, I was like, maybe she just does not like talking to people, so she used that name, the silent woman. So yeah. And also, if you notice, there was a major spike in 2003 and like a lot of people were killed after that, and that is mostly because when the presidential elections were coming, the present ruling government launched a bill which was for public health care of people above 70. And Juana was already familiar with acting like a nurse and a healthcare worker to get information and get into the houses of people. And that's how a lot of people believed she was able to identify the people, and it was later also allegedly proven, but we'll come to that later. But it wasn't until 2005 that the police agreed. No, it was until 2005. Yes, it was until 2000, not until 2005 that the police actually agreed that this entire case was a serial killer based. Before that, the government was basically saying the opposition wants to sensationalize things to undermine their rule. That's why they're making it a hype. So I feel it was a governmental thing that the entire investigation was not properly carried out and properly taken care of. But other than that, there are so many aspects which I cannot like stop talking about, and they're very annoying. But in 2005, the only reason why they started taking it seriously was the killing of the 82-year-old Carmen Carmela Gonzalez Miguel on September 28th 2005. I was going to talk about that, but I thought like maybe I mixed up the name, so I did not talk about it late at that initial when I was naming the victims. Now she was, and I quote, an upper class woman, and she was the mother of a Mexican criminologist, Luis Rafael Monero Gonzalez. And her murder was the thing which actually launched a special operation under the name Operacion Parques y Jardines, which is translated to Operations Parks and Gardens. And here, the whole approach was to patrol the area wherein the lot of murders were happened. And in 2005 also, Juana started dating a taxi driver, which gave her an upper hand when it came to commute. And allegedly, he was also a influence or an ally. What is the word? Accomplice in the murder of the rich woman who was killed. Now, when this murder happened, not only a police investigation was launched, a proper operation was launched for like killing of like dozens of women before, but it also, and they also invited French investigators who had recently caught a serial killer called the Monster of Montmartre, who had a similar motif as this. And I did not look into him a lot, and because I wanted to keep it as a surprise and like maybe cover it once upon a time in the future. So what I'm about to talk about next from this point is a thesis submitted to the McGill University in partial fulfillment of the requirements of the degree in MA Communication Studies by Susana Vergas Cervantes in Art History and Communication Studies, McGill University, Montreal. And my cat is walking around the kitchen. I need to go check on him. So it wasn't the cat, it was my mom. Anyway, back to this amazing ass paper that I read. So basically, in the entire search of the whole thing, according to the paper, the police had created 64 sketches of the possible serial killer based on various witness accounts and the last person who saw the victim and such. And they identified it as El homicidal vestido como una enfermera, which translates to a male homicidal dressed as a female nurse. I mean, I loved the fact how they couldn't really digest a woman killing people to the extent they, like, the reason I said the Spanish version is like it had el homicidal, that means the male homicidal person, and una enfermera, that means just as a female nurse. And I was like, yeah, society, fuck you. This was like, now this is the case which I wanted to talk about, that how sexist the entire working of the case was, how biased it was towards the male gender, that it gave the female gender and like Juana the right to kill people for such a, not the right, the pass to kill people for such a long time, because the police couldn't really digest, the criminologists, the identifiers couldn't really digest that a female is capable of killing people. Now, even when the entire thing was done, the chief of police, he was called Batiz. I should have looked up his entire name. He basically said, translated, judicial authorities have determined that a male serial killer has been found. The height being 1.70 meters, they are robust and dresses as a woman and applies a lot of makeup. Though the offender has not been determined, though the sex of the offender has not been determined. And in this entire charade, they went on to, you know, interrogate or check on from 38 to 50, depending on what research you take into account, transvestites, transgender, and transsexual male sex workers. They were arrested, photographed, and their prints were taken in order to match with the serial killer's prints, which were picked up from the elderly women. Now, this is something I actually forgot to talk about, that from all the killings that they did, Juana did not really care about cleaning the crime scene. So her fingerprints were everywhere. When she wanted to rob things, it were on the objects that the women had, on the belts that she used to strangle them, so on and so forth. So it was like they weren't able to find a match in the criminal, existing criminal record, or with the transgender people they basically harassed. And they were like, wow. And I was just baffled. And the fact that the sex has not been determined, it can actually be translated to sexual orientation has not been determined. And it was, I believe, mistranslated in the English versions. I did look up the Spanish versions, so it kind of made sense. But yeah, so determining the sexual orientation was actually a French thing. The French influence caused this. So the guy, the monster of Montmartre, yes, who was also called Thierry Paulin, he was basically a homosexual man who was accused of killing elderly people, and he was arrested, and the French were like, oh my god, we are so fun. So it was their influence which actually caused the entire investigations, according to my eyes, side reel to an already very criminalized group and a marginalized group in the Latin American countries, which I believe is highly Christian. And you know, yeah, you know, how annoying is that? So like, this reading this, I was like, yeah, the French coming in didn't really help. It pains me to say that, and that the French weren't useful. I was like, Désolé, mon professeur de français. And I just said that to flaunt my French accent. And yeah, so when none of the fingerprints matched, the police was like, the serial killer might not be a transvestite or the people that we've seen, but he is surely a transgender. And I was like, you really don't know anything, do you? And on the other hand, like, the entire perception of a woman being impossible, the entire thing which was conducted was basically in the marginalized section, and forgive me for using the words like lower class poor and non-normative subjects. Like, the police did not really look into homosexual men in gay bars in the upper to upper middle class neighborhoods of Mexico. They didn't look for people in that background because, according to them, that could not happen because those people in the middle to upper middle class of that time were basically had a more masculine gay males as the clientele and more feminine lesbians as the other clientele. So there was no gender transgression or gender fluidity, so they were less likely to do something as weird as serial killing. Whereas the working bars in the Mexico City, in the lower strata, quote unquote, the men were effeminate and feminine and the women were more masculine. So they were like, yeah, those were the people who did it because they are like against the gender norms. I was like, okay, yeah. So, I mean, it is actually very counterproductive. The society actually supports kind of homosexuality, but as long as you hide it and does not really support it in that manner. So it was like, what? But like, I'm not saying society does promote it, like supports it. At that time, they clearly did not, from what I was able to read, but they weren't. Anyway, I'm just rambling right now because there's so many things I want to talk about, which I'm obviously gonna. Now, the anticlimactic, the final arc of the entire thing happened in January 25th, 2006, when a renter was coming home and he saw the door to the apartment of his landlady open. And Mexican people, being as jovial and nice as they are, they came and the person got in the room in the house to say hello. And when he did that, he saw Ana Maria de los Reyes El Faro strangled on the floor. He saw a woman fleeing the crime scene and he was like, fuck, that was her. And then he like screamed out for the police and they came up, they caught her, and it was like a chase of 10 meters, I believe. And when they caught her, she had two plastic bags, and according to some reports and some sources, had a stethoscope and a list of beneficiaries of the government program of the, which was called Sea Valley, according to this specific research paper, but I wasn't able to find the name of it from any place else. So there's that. And in the end, people often say that maybe she got like really sloppy and she did not really care because she was basically untouchable in her head. Like, she had been killing people for a very long time now. So the weird thing is, when she was caught, the police had actually made a bust which was representing her, which was made out of clay to profile the, according to the profile of the victims and the, you know, the sketches that they had. And they asked her to hold it in her hands while people clicked pictures from each side. And it was like, look, that is the bust that we made. Oh my God, it's so similar. And it was not actually similar. According to me, the bust's nose was actually very sharp and stuff. But that's a separate thing. And I was like, oh God. Now, that is basically the end of the criminal part and the crime part of it. I think, and I know that I overlooked a lot of things while talking about this. I had research on how they got in touch with each client, and I could have said that, but that would have made the episode like 3 hours long or something. A. B. I'm sorry to say this, but like, the brutality in the crimes, yes, was there, but the brutality was not so intense, according to the FBI too, that she could be profiled as a prolific serial killer per se. All right, and this is something which I'm going to come back to in a little bit. So now what I'm going to talk about is the aftermath of her being arrested and how annoying the entire thing was. Now I'm going to read verbatim from the research paper because I really don't think there's any need for my speaking anymore, like this little paragraph which she said. So, as soon as Juana Barraza was declared La Mata Viejitas, now, like, it was El Mata Viejitas initially, now it's become La Mata Viejitas since it's a female. The narrative of the serial killer changed dramatically. The police description of her character became pathological, and earlier it was brilliant and astute. It replicated the international constructions around female serial killing. Contrary to the description of male killers who are brilliant and possess traits that are desirable even if these skills are used for evil, incarcerated violent women are seen as strange alien creatures, often being beyond redemptions. Feminist approaches to did somebody scream? Okay, maybe my ear, like, it's morning now, so maybe people are screaming. Feminist approaches to criminology has pointed out impossibility of imagining violent women who can be represented as mad or bad. In words of Helen Birch, which I do not know who it is, as I said, I'm quoting it from the research paper. I'm going to read up on her after this episode. She says, the idea that women are capable of extreme violence is a anathema, I do not know what that word means, to most of us. Meanwhile, in courtrooms and newspapers throughout the Western world, women who kill are divided into two camps: bad, wicked, inhuman, or mad, basically not like ordinary women. This extreme defines the norm. Many feminist criminologists have pointed out that our reluctance to criminalize beyond women betrays our fears of falling apart in our social fabric. Moreover, it has been pointed out that violent women are seen neither as sane nor as women. Society needs to see violent women as different, either mad or bad, because otherwise we would really need to have discourses to understand that both men and women can be violent and really don't have to say. Okay, I wrote the comment which I was supposed to write. How organized can anybody be? So, like, yeah, that is it. She explained it so well. She wrote so well in the entire paper. You should read it all, and you're like, what? And you would have been like, Koi, why didn't you simply read the paper instead of recording the podcast? Because I wanted to do that. I'm not even kidding. But it was such an amazing paper. I loved it. Also, now kind of I'm gonna come to the fun facts part of it. Like, Juana, when she was caught, according to some papers, also had amulets of Santa Muerte, and I also have a tarot card of Santa Muerte, so it also puts me into, like, the serial killing category. But she, and according to other sources, she had shrines which was dedicated to the Santa Muerte and Jesus Malverte, who is basically the saint to the poor or the drug lord god kind of person, which I might talk more about in the Out of the Blue, which will actually extend to the Buddhas and how they function. But anyway, then this is not a fun fact, but, like, another fact was, like, she said that all these women basically reminded her of her mother and the abuse that she has gone through because of her. And the first murder that she committed was a result of anger, because she felt that the lady was, you know, be looking down at her because of her lack of class, pride, and such. And yeah, now there's also this thing which was actually very interesting, that normally when she killed on Wednesdays and Tuesdays, I believe, and she used to wear red, which signified the police's thing that, all right, she was stupid. Red means anger, so she's mad and she was angry, so she's insane. Now, when she was taken into custody, she went through a lot of psychological analysis, and it was seen that when she used to look at inanimate objects such as chairs, she had pleasant thoughts, and when she used to look at animate objects such as human beings, women, and such, she did not like looking at that a lot. So it created maybe that she didn't like human beings, and this can be something which can be related to her entire life, the trauma that she had when it came to the species of humans. Or, and now there was a specific word for it, like some kind of medical term, but I actually really, really, really tried to research on it. I spent like 45 minutes on it, but I was not able to find it. But I have an example of Chris Benoit family side, Benoit, since he was American, family side and suicide, who was also a wrestler. And according to the autopsy, from what I remember, he was He was diagnosed with a certain problem that some blows to the head creates some kind of hemorrhage or something, which are usually found only post-mortem, and which creates anger and inability to control emotions and such. And since she was fighting at Luchas Libres, I hope that was the right word. If I've forgotten it, I'm sorry. She must have had some injuries which could have caused the entire thing. Now, she was also sentenced to 759 years for murder of 16 people. So after this, like after 16 convictions, they basically stopped convicting her anymore because maybe it did not make sense. Like, I do not know, like a lot of time this has happened. This even happened in, I believe, Robert Picton's case, that they were like, all right, we've convicted a lot of, like, there's already a lot of sentence here, so let's not increase it and make it cost a lot more, which is kind of shitty, but that happened. And according to the research paper, this was perhaps the longest ever sentence. Maybe the research paper, some other source, I'm not sure anymore because I've not written what source it is. So yeah, and a lot of groups are actually said that this is like really unfair comparative to the brutality of the crimes, because men have done it worse. And seriously, men have done it worse. Look at Robert Picton, the Californian cult gang people, and like I've covered half the men killing women. And there was this douchebag who killed her who cut her arms out and threw her in a ditch, and he was let out on parole in like 7 years because of good behaviors. So they were like, the entire social flaw and the judiciary, like, just not accepting that a woman could kill, actually created this harsh sentence. Though she can get parole after 50 years, so that is in 2056, when she will be like rather old, she would be able to get a parole. And now, actually fun fact, but which is actually very, very what, is that there's an actual song to this, which is sung by Amandita. And it's called La Mata Vejitas. And the Google translator translated it as La Mata Vejitas, La Mata Vejitas, the old lady, she wants to fuck your grandmother. La Mata Vejitas, La Mata Vejitas, the old lady, she wants to fuck your grandmother. She is sassy. She does not stop at all. She disguises herself as a nurse and attacks in the shower. Her entrails drive her crazy. And I was like, Google, are you sure, honey? You're fine. Did my mother plug? Oh my god, the washing machine is on. That is the background noise, in case you hear that. Okay, so that happened. I'm not sure if in the post edit that would be audible or not, but if in case there's like a lot of and then it was the washing machine. So yeah, Google translated it like that, but the word was eschasse. I've never learned this word, so I actually looked up its meaning, and it means lie or put down. So according to my limited linguistic knowledge in Spanish, I would actually translate it to the old lady, La Mata Vejitas, she will put down your grandmother, not fuck your grandmother. But I do not know in what connotation Google translated it, but they did that, and I am just telling you what I learned. Moreover, the song was actually produced by Sony Music, like endorsed by Sony Music. Like in YouTube, it was written like brackets Sony Music 2010. And there were people who were laughing in the comments. And I was like, am I the only one who sees the problem here? Like that this is so wrong. But I don't know, people have different ways of processing grief, and maybe it was that. And finally, in 2015, she got back into the news, and like the first news she was in, like, it's a woman, when she was caught and not a man. And that was like actually sensational, not her killing people. The sensation part was that she was a her. So in 2015, there was a headline, she found love. And because in 2015, she got married to Miguel Angel, who is, I believe, a 74-year-old, at that time, a 74-year-old fellow convict who was sentenced for murder in the same prison, that is Santa Marta Acatitla prison. So both of them never saw each other before the marriage, and they had been in a relationship, quote unquote, for an year, and they got married with 48 other people and took their vows in the prison as a collective ceremony. Now, this marriage thing is actually a part of a Mexican government program called Lazos on reclusión, that means bonds in confinement, which helps inmates forge personal relationships with each other. And in 2016, she was like, you know, when we saw each other, the love vanished. And Juana told the deputy that during the entire marriage, we met for like 40 minutes and I do not like this guy. And they filed for a divorce and I guess they got the divorce. And the articles quoted in the end, she now laughs when she thinks about it. Tacos from Mondays to Wednesdays are more her thing. Love is for other people. And I'm like, okay. So, congratulations to the people who have made this far. I believe this is the longest episode yet. I am not sure. It shows 1 hour, 20 minutes, 130 seconds. And it took me like 2.5 hours to record the entire thing. Wow. So, and my vocal cords hurt. So I do a lot for you and I love you guys and you're worth all the effort. And thank you so much. And the validation episode is coming on. And I'm so happy about that too. Now the end credits are, the podcast is hosted by Koyone. Fuck, I forgot to introduce myself in the beginning. So hi guys, this is the podcast called In the Memory of the Goldfish. I'm your host, Koy. And I'm an 11-souled half-celestial. And the podcast is hosted by me, Koyone. It's co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy, who's an amazing person, as I've told you like a billion times. Then my social handles is KoyOnAir on Instagram. Clubhouse, which is an amazing app, add me there. I'll speak a lot with... No, I won't actually speak a lot because when there are like more than 20 people in a room, I'm like, I cannot speak here anymore. I'm going to go like slowly and gradually. But you can still meet me there. I'm on Twitter as KoyOnAir again. You can mail me your validation episodes or suggestions as... according to this time at koy@meetmynefix.com. And I believe that is it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Bye bye. And I'm gonna go get some sleep. I should really not kiss you guys. That's just too you.